All right, welcome to a Backlash podcast at the Wisconsin Muskie Expo. It's Friday, and Brad is notoriously absent, so Jeff Vandermortel is going to have to fill in admirably.
Happy to be here.
Little thinner version. No offense, Brad.
Not nearly as handsome, though.
I agree, especially since he shaved his beard.
I know, right?
Man, is he handsome. All right, so let's go around the horn. We have Jeff. We'll start with you. Introduce yourself, since you're going to be part of our panel discussion, and we have three others. And we had one other that took a phone call, but eventually had to say, all right, let's get this show on the road, because otherwise we're never going to have ourselves a podcast tonight.
Jeff Vandermortel, WDH Guide Service and Muskie Academy, based out of Minocqua area in northern Wisconsin.
I was just looking for a neat one since I'm heavy.
DJ Chipita, Hinterland Muskie Guides.
Michael Hansen, Namakagan Area Guide Service, based out of the Hayward area.
Matt Ross, Muskie Operations Guide Service. I am based out of the Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire area.
And then, like I said, we're going to have Brian Scaife from Angling Anarchy jump in at some point. All right, so fellas, I had a few people visit the booth today. First question was, first couple of things you do when you get on the lake, either a new lake or a familiar lake. He's just looking to try to shorten the learning curve on a day-to-day basis. Jeffrey, you can take up.
Sure. I mean, the first thing you want to get on the lake, if at all possible, do a little research before you get there. You know, research your lake maps. DNR's got a whole bunch of those on the website, at least for Wisconsin. Of course, you can always pull up your Lake Master chip or Navionics chip on your boat. Do a little pre-gaming or pull it up on your phone. And then when you get out there, it's one of those things you really want to ask yourself, how much time do I have? Am I getting out here, you know, an hour before moon? I think the window's now. I'm cutting it close. Then you want to, if you don't know anything about the lake, go to what looks good and just fish through it, kind of scout as you go. Because when they're biting, you don't want to miss that window. If you got a little time before moon, which is the ideal way to do it, scout out a little bit, spend a little time looking at what you think are the obvious spots, and then, of course, go back and fish through those likely areas at moon or whatever you think the next feeding window will be.
All right, move over to Michael. We'll swing back to DJ after he's done selling St. Croix rods over here.
So I agree with Jeff. Doing your homework prior to visiting the lake will help quite a bit, but I'm doing more spots on the spots. Fishy looking areas, but looking for that one spot that really stands out on that spot and hitting multiple areas like that, just covering, you know, as much water as possible and then eliminating anything that isn't working and obviously duplicating anything that is working for you if you're seeing fish, catching fish, so on and so forth.
All right, Matt Ross.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I apologize if I copied Jeff on anything. I couldn't really hear what you were saying over there, but especially with new water, research is important. Looking at lake maps, I'll look at fish stocking a lot of times, see what's in there for fish and when the last time they stocked it was. And then when it's on the water, yeah, you're just looking for those spots that you think are good. And like Mike said, spot on the spots. I also kind of like to get away from some of the crowds and look for some of those smaller spots that have really good structure, really good weed growth, stuff like that, stuff that not a lot of people are pounding, and start picking some of those apart.
All right, like I said, we'll jump back to DJ. So then the next question we have, it's similar to that first question. We're going to go with, if you have 3 hours to fish, we're talking weekend warrior stuff. They get up north for, you know, whatever the day, they spent the day at the ice cream place or on the lake or whatever, and they're getting out for, I'm assuming we're going to go night bite. How are you going to attack 3 hours on the water?
So I guess that all kind of depends on how much time you have. If you're only looking at a couple hours, I'm going to look for possibly a lake that I've been on before, something that I'm a little more familiar with, maybe a smaller body of water that's not going to be so hard to pick apart. And then I'm just going to get on the water and start looking, use my side imaging and my electronics to look for those spots, whether it be rocks, weeds, bait fish, stuff like that, just to kind of speed up that curve a little bit.
I couldn't agree with Matt more on that. Absolutely. Using your electronics is huge, especially if you don't have a whole lot of time out on the water. Covering as much water as humanly possible. And if you're locating fish, locating bait, locating good structure, you want to find those areas and then duplicate them from there. So if you're finding fish on certain structures, bait on certain structure, go find other structures that look exactly like that, which there's typically very many of those kind of areas like that on a certain body of water.
All right, DJ, why don't you introduce yourself, since you, well, as of right now, you currently have failed at the sale on the St. Croix rod, but I think that fish might come back.
It's a comeback. You're definitely going to come back on that one in a little while. So yeah, come back. DJ Chipita, Hinterland Muskie Guides. We're out of Oneida, Vilas County area. I'm based personally out of Minocqua area. Yeah. So I guess the question was 3 hours at night. How do you break it down? First thing is if it's a lake that I've fished during the day, I know it well. I'm going back to those spots where during the day move, same thing at night. Kind of like you said over there, it was looking for bait and known structure. Don't try to go and fish a bunch of water that you don't know during the daytime to go at night. Night's a completely different animal. So fish stuff you know at night, which is going to make you way more productive to begin with than trying to figure everything out at night. But yeah, I'd go after bait, known spots. What's been going on during the day? Have the fish been up shallow? Do you think they're going to slide off or they're sliding off, sliding in? Pretty much your basic stuff. But I would say the biggest key is knowing the water you're going to fish at night during the day. So it's not such a learning curve at night.
Jeff Vandermortel, WDH Guide Service. Yeah, I would say all of the above for sure. All good information. The one thing I would try to focus on if you have your time early in the morning or later in the day, which is really typical of those family outings, try to pick a lake that plays to that strength. If you have something in our area, for example, like the Minocqua chain that gets a ton of boat traffic, or even the Eagle River chain that gets a lot of boat traffic, and you got 3 hours in the morning to fish before you got to take the family out for breakfast or go do whatever you're going to do for the day, go to the zoo, whatever it is. Try to correlate that with somewhere also placed to the strength where that system might be doing a little better than some of the surrounding areas. And of course, familiarity on the system is absolutely a bonus. Choose that whenever possible.
All right. Then for all of you guys are spending a lot of time in northern Wisconsin, everybody knows there's a million musky lakes in northern Wisconsin. Like, how do you even choose a lake to start on from that day? Like, what factors play into your lake choices?
Is this for the short window to fish?
No, I would say it's just general, like, I'm going to start the day out fishing. I got all day to fish. You know, you're in all likelihood you might hit more than one lake. Like, but, you know, we'll use me, for example. I go up north and there's seven different lakes within a half hour drive of me. Like, one of the hardest things I need to do is choose which one it's going to be that day. You know, sometimes I can kind of ask you, like, hey, Jeff, you have any tips? But not everybody has the same phone of friends that I do. So it doesn't always work out for everybody else.
Banana Lake.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so staying on top of that, having some sort of an idea of what kind of conditions you're expecting for the day is going to be huge, right? If you got really marginal weather, something that's going to be bluebird skies, looks like it's going to be tight windows and a tough bite. As Matt Ross had said earlier about the stocking stuff, that's something to keep in mind. It can give you a pretty good idea what the fish population looks like in that lake if it's got really good sustained stocking for a decade or more, preferably more than that. It's probably a solid bet that there's a good number of fish there. And if that, you know, water clarity and stuff does not play a huge role, like if it's a gin clear trout body of water, it's trout, you know, trout type water, you're not going to want to probably go to that on a tough bite day. Anytime you're exploring, you don't really ever want to do it on too tough a day, right? You want to try to explore things when you've got good conditions. So you really just, you have to identify your goals. Am I looking to go out and learn a lake? Am I looking to go out and catch a fish? What's my goal for the day? Obviously, both is good, but try to pick what works to your strengths. Again, you know, if you've got time, you've got good water, you got some good reports, you got some good intel, and you want to go spend time and you got good weather to match that, then you go and swing for that. If you want to go and try to catch a big fish, you're pretty familiar with a lot of lakes in the area, but there's some trophy water there that, you know, this might be the day to go hit it. That's the other option too.
Yeah. I mean, I get this question quite a bit. It's one of those things where I always tell people is first thing is you can do is you've got days before your trip, you're sitting at home or whatever, figure out where you're staying at, start looking at a few lakes in the area. Like Jeff said, there's a bunch of information in Wisconsin database on stocking and year class and all that, topography and all that. Do a little bit of research, figure out what they are, see what kind of body they are, if they're clear, stained, weeds, rocks. Then another thing is all these weather apps that nowadays have weather history. Watch your wind patterns from the last few days and that. Put that pile together a little bit, try to figure out everything. And then, you know, sometimes you just got to flip a coin. Days are good. Flip a coin, figure out where you're at. You know, sometimes days are bad. Like if you got a clear bluebird day, you're definitely not going to want to go on a clear body of water. You're going to want to try something a little more stained than that. But say the biggest thing is do a little bit of work in the before time. So when you do have those fishing hours, you can optimize those instead of driving around all day or trying to decide if you're on the right lake or the wrong lake.
So, man. When I'm fishing, I hate moving to new bodies of water. The only reason I'll move to a new body of water is if I absolutely have to put a fish in the boat. A lot of times where I'm fishing, we're fishing for the biggest, baddest fish up in northern Wisconsin. And if we have to move to an action lake to put a fish in the boat, we will do that if we absolutely have to. Other than that, I suggest staying out on that body of water and really working it hard. But when I'm looking at those trophy bodies of water, again, I'm looking at the stocking records, but especially 15, 20 years ago, I want to see consistent stocking or large dumpings of muskies anywhere from 15 to 20 years ago, because that's going to be your best shot at putting an absolute giant in the boat. Any lakes that get a big stocking within 10 years, you're fishing for nice muskies without a doubt, but I'm looking for big muskies. So I want to find out the big dumpings of muskies when they were laid in there 15, 20 years ago.
Yep. Totally agree. Are we talking more so lakes that we've been on before or just new lakes?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it'd be either one. You know, some people are going to choose new lakes. Other people are going to, you know, they're going to be on lakes that they've been on. Like I said, for me, for example, I've been on 25 of them up there, but sometimes it can be a challenge of which one of the 25 I want to narrow down to start that Saturday morning or evening or whatever. You know, obviously if you've been there multiple weekends in a row, you kind of be like, okay, that one was pretty good last weekend, but is it going to be as good this weekend? I'm sure you guys have seen the pattern change in 5 hours or even a couple hours, you know? So.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to stick with, I guess, if I'm talking about waters that I've been on or I'm a little bit familiar with, I guess. But first and foremost, I think everybody's going to be looking at weather. And then it's just a matter of what you're looking for. Are you looking for smaller fish, bigger fish? You want to fish dark water, clear water? On waters that I've been on that I'm familiar with, I'll start looking at maybe some historical patterns. Not that I put a ton of weight into that, but if I've got lakes that I know are really good at a certain time of year, I'll start hitting those lakes. That's the biggest thing. Mike, you had mentioned staying on the lake and kind of pounding the water. I do agree with that. And I think to some extent, everybody, especially musky fishermen, are stubborn that way and want to do that. But there are times where I'll bounce around. So I think it's important to be able to be ready to adapt and move if you have to.
All right, Brian Scaife, Angling Anarchy. First off, why don't you give yourself an introduction and talk briefly about what you're up to, since you know, were so important, decided to take phone calls during the middle of a podcast, you know. But and then we'll let you answer the question, as long as Jeff keyed you in. Did you clue him in?
I didn't tell me.
Oh, all right. Well, the question would be choosing a lake. Which lake, like, how do you choose a lake on a day-to-day basis? Obviously, I'll let you talk about your YouTube channel or whatever. You need to choose lakes to try to film something. And how do you make those choices on a day-to-day basis?
Sure, yeah. So the little guy has a strep throat. That was the important phone call that I had to take.
Sure, yeah, okay. We'll let you slide on that one, I guess.
But so yeah, my YouTube channel is Angling Anarchy. I've been posting a video once a week. It's probably 80% musky fishing since August of 2019. So it definitely keeps me busy. And as far as choosing a lake, for me, it's not so much about choosing a lake where I'm going to catch a giant fish. For me, content is important. So a 32 incher means just as much to me as a 32 pounder. I mean, I know that sounds silly to say, but it's like, for me, it's really true. Like, I get just as excited about a small fish. So, I mean, a lot of the times we'll look for lakes that are numbers lakes. You know, and that might be in northern Wisconsin. It might be going to Iowa. It might be in Ohio. I mean, I was just out in Ohio for the Muskie Max show out there, and we hopped on Leesville. We hopped on Salt Fork, and I unfortunately didn't catch anything. But those lakes are jam packed with muskies, and there's some decent size there. But yeah, I mean, as far as picking the lakes, I'm probably not as good at that as, like, these guys are professionals. I'm just a guy out here trying to create content and be entertaining. So, like I said, I don't really get into the stocking numbers. I do have buddies that will do that for me, like my friend Nathan. He'll really get into, like, checking out rivers and lakes on Google Earth, and I'll let him do the research for me, kind of. But yeah, I'm just going out there trying to catch a fish and film something and be silly and fun and. So that's probably not as helpful as these guys were, but that's what I'm doing.
All right. Well, it appears as though Jeff, he's got the similar phoner friends to that I do, you know, like, hey, somebody else want to do the work for me?
It's a good circle to travel in.
It is. Absolutely. All right, let's go. We did this one in Minnesota. We did most memorable muskie. We're not talking necessarily the biggest muskie in your boat that year. We're just talking, like, which one was the most memorable fish for you for your 2023 season? I told the story last week on the podcast, like, my son catching his first casting muskie and him getting jacked up going, Dad, I got one, is, you know, literally the coolest muskie that I could have had last year. And so, you know, what one stands out the most to all you guys?
Yeah, it was a pretty special year. 2023 was a really good year. it's hard to pick one, but there's one that for, well, it's not hard to pick this one because it's an obvious one. I caught a 50 in northern Wisconsin with my 5-year-old son in the boat. We went fishing on a whim. It was a super cool, you know, I had the day off. I'm out every day. I had the Saturday off, but it was really good weather. We were coming into moon, a couple hours to moon. We're in the yard and he says, "Dad, let's go musky fishing." I mean, he always wants to go fishing. Normally my daughter's right on board. She was working on a project with mom. So it was just boy time. He and I went and hopped in. We're in the boat. We're driving. We're just looking to catch a musky, right? There's some nice fish in the lake, but I'm just looking to catch a fish. I'm like, which one should we go to? There's a point on the left and a point on the right. I just let him sit on my lap. He goes, points to the one on the right. Like, all right, let's go over there. He tells me, I smell him over there. I'm like, okay, you know, cute. You know, we go over there, fish about 15 minutes and I lost one. That was about 35, 36. It jumped. We saw it come up. It was on a Medusa. Or no, it was a dog or a Medusa. I can't remember what that was. I think it was a dog actually. And it got off and he was just, you know, heartbroken, right? So his dad, you lost him. You know, he's just, I'm like, dude, it's okay, man. Just have your bologna sandwich and just chill out for a minute. We'll get another bite here. It's, you know, 45 minutes to moon, impending weather. Like we couldn't be out there in any better conditions. And about 15 minutes later, we ended up sticking was a good fish and we ended up helping me net it and everything. And it was a 50.0, you know, about as big of a fish as you'll get in northern Wisconsin. So very special. And Rick Laxick did a reproduction of that for me. So I'll be taking that home after the show here this weekend. That was easily my top choice.
All right. My most memorable one last year is my PB. It was a 53.5-incher on the northern Wisconsin opener. And I mean, part of it for me too is I got it on film. I got to capture it on film. So that was one of the really cool parts. But this fish comes up and just eats boat side. It's sort of wallowing around in slow motion as those big fish do. And my buddy asked me, do you have it on free spool? And I was like, no, net this now, like right now, because I could tell it wasn't hooked very well. So he's under pressure. I'm under pressure. It's a big fish. We all know how that goes. He gets the net in the water, doesn't go quite deep enough. The bait gets hooked a little bit high in the net. And now there's this 40-pound fish flailing around. You just can't, I don't care how good of a net man you are, you can't control that fish. It comes unpinned. And for a split second, I'm watching this giant fish just sitting outside the net and thinking we had it and now we don't. And my friend flipped the net over as the fish swam down right into it. And it couldn't have turned out any better. I mean, it's probably some of the coolest footage I've ever gotten. It's on Instagram at like almost 2 million views. I mean, and the only downside to it really is you get all these crappy comments, as Jeff, you know how that goes on YouTube. The more views you get, the crummier the comments get. But I've gotten used to just pushing those to the side because, I mean, what an amazing net job that was for him to think that quick of, oh no, this fish is almost going to get away, to flip it around and have that happen. So that was far and away probably the most memorable muskie, not only of last year, but my entire life probably.
Yeah, I guess I've got a story kind of like Jeff's. My son has become my scouting partner. He's 9 now, and we go check out new lakes after school. In summer, he's kind of off, and that's so we go to a new lake, and we're scouting it. And he's got about a 6 to 7 minute attention span, so does not like riding around. You know, Dad, that looks like a spot. That looks like a spot. I'm like, we're gonna go check everything out, and that do all that stuff. And we go, we're cruising all over. And he's like, Dad, are we ever going to fish? It's like about an hour, hour and a half before dark. I'm like, yep, we're going to go fish. This is where we're going to start. So he's gotten into casting and that now, which is pretty good. He's gotten efficient enough that we can throw a few different baits and that. He's throwing a bait and I'm throwing a bait. And literally second cast, I lay into one. I tell him, drop the rod. He's stumbling back, gets back the rod. He's fighting it for a little bit as I'm going to get the net. Well, the fish kind of is beating him. And I look back and the rod is bent over the outboard now as it's going around, and he's fighting it and he's freaking out because he's more worried he's going to lose everything. So we end up, I grab the rod, I'm holding it. He's like, I just want a net, Dad. I just want a net. I'm like, okay. He grabs the net, get the fish around, put the fish in the net. He's screaming, excited and that. And all of a sudden we're getting there, I high five him and that. And we're talking. And all of a sudden I start to hear clapping and cheering. And I'm like, not even paying attention. There's a boat of like 5 kids and 3 or 4 adults on a pontoon boat who got to watch this whole thing within 50 yards of themselves. And he was pretty proud of himself as he got to, you know, hold the fish up in front of all the people in front of him. That turned out to be about a 40-inch fish. So it was a good fish, but he was a little worried after that for a while. He just wanted to be the net guy. He didn't want to break Dad's rods or lose Dad's rods. And I told him, we don't have to worry about that. But it was pretty cool moment to, you know, get to enjoy with him, a little chaos in the boat, and still ended up getting the fish. So
I think I'm the only guy here that doesn't have kids.
Yeah. Well, with that new haircut, it's going to help out, I think.
You never know. You never know. But boy, yeah, there's a lot of memorable parts of 2023, but I'd have to say I took my good buddy Dean out. He moved out from Colorado a few years ago after he went out musky fishing with me a couple times and said that he wanted to move out and try something different, go musky fishing. Dean is a okay fisherman. He's not great by any means, but he likes to go out every once in a while. But yeah, there was one day I took him out. He caught a 49.5 by 23.75. It was his biggest fish. And fast forward to the next day, I told him his girlfriend was up and I was like, we got to get Paula out in the boat and she will set the hook on muskie. And we pull up on a spot where I knew a big fish was, drug a sucker right next to her, came up, smoked it, get Paula all set up at the front. I've never seen a hook set like that before from a first time muskie angler. It was unbelievable. I've never seen a rod bend like that. So it was like just tickled pink. And it was the only time I've ever pulled up the trolling motor in 2023 because this fish just dogged her and she's reeling. I'm trying to back the drag off a little bit. Her hair is getting caught in the reel. I'm trying to tighten up the drag a little bit. The fish is under the boat. It's rubbing against the boat. I'm hanging onto the line, pushing it away, getting line burn all over my hands. And we netted it and we're all freaking out. And I was like, Paula, how cool was that? She was like, oh yeah, it was cool. So it was a memorable time, though. So just to see a couple 30 plus pounders caught 2 days by two lovebirds, it was pretty sweet.
I don't have any cool kid stories like you guys did. I still struggle to keep my kid out bluegill fishing for 20 minutes, but we're getting there. I look forward to that day. And Brian, I want to know what you would have done if your buddy would have botched that net job. No, I would say for me, my coolest moment this year was late October. I had two young kids and their grandpa. They had kind of just went through a family tragedy and their grandma wanted to do something nice for them. So they looked me up and hired me for a half day in the fall. We were doing the sucker thing and it was, late October, it was like 65, 70 degrees, which is, usually the kiss of death. So we're out there for 5-6 hours and I'm marking fish, just can't get them to go. But finally, at noon, when we were about to quit, one of the sucker rods went off and I got this young man his first muskie. It was, 37 incher, but he was tickled pink. And I think as guides, we all, strive for that happiness when it comes to especially kids getting their first muskie. It's just a really cool moment. So,
all right. Next question would be, let's talk about gear and, just new stuff for this year. So every year there's something new that comes out. There's either new baits, new rods, new reels, new whatever. Like, what's one thing you're excited about for this upcoming season to play around with?
I, for one, am excited to play around with those Bam Bam baits. Played around a little bit with them last fall. I've seen them work. We're moving fish on them when we couldn't get anything else to move. So I'm excited to play around with those a little bit more this year. I'm a big rubber guy in general, so anytime a new rubber bait comes out of the market, I'll play with it quite a bit.
So it's not really new, but they're really hard to find. Tom's Custom Baits, he's actually here at the expo. He makes a fantastic glider. Unbelievable. Several different models, but one that I really like is the one that just sinks so slowly. You can work that thing unbelievably slow, keep it in the strike zone, especially around timber and other snaggy areas like that. But like I said, Tom's been around for a while. He doesn't sell a ton of his baits. He may not be doing it for too much longer, but I got to play around with one last year in the fall, did really, really well on it. And I cannot wait to add that to my spring arsenal this year.
I've got two. First one is I got to see the prototype work this last fall is the Boss Shad Kingpin. It's a jerk bait with a soft tail, kind of a twitch jerk bait. Works really good. Got to see the prototypes of that and watch fish get caught. So I'm definitely got a couple of those. And then the other one, I really enjoyed the 9-inch adjustable weight Suic last year. It's a great bait that you can leave tied on and work two different structures just by popping a weight in and out. So I definitely got a couple of the 10-inch adjustable weights that I'll be using this year. And they work in like the nines. It's a great bait.
I'll have to give a second to the Bowfin by Bam Bam Baits. I've known Brady for years going out to Pennsylvania to that show. So it was pretty interesting to see that he was making his own bait and they look really cool. Definitely different body shape and everything from, you know, a Medusa or a Bulldog or any of the rubber, standard rubber baits that people are seeing right now. So I'm excited about that. And then another one I'm excited about are some of the Rusty's custom lures. I've used those in the past, but he's got some different models that I'm looking forward to using. I'm really intrigued by the glide bait with the little dangly blade in the back. So I'm going to be checking out a couple of his baits, the six sucker and different sizes of the fortune teller. So looking forward to tossing those.
There's some good stuff out this year. My top vote is going to be the 10-inch adjustable weight Suet kit. That was something that I talked about with Mike for quite a while ago because he was looking to come up for some stuff for customs for shows, and that he started coming out with them on the bigger baits. They already had those, and you have the weight kit, so you could always buy. But I, like myself, like probably a lot of people, don't really want to punch holes in our own baits because you can't really put it back together after that. And it was something that was just kind of a natural fit for them. It's a great bait. And now the most recent addition is the 10-inch weighted wood. The weighted wood being my favorite of the Suic lineup, and that 10-inch model in particular, that is my moneymaker of all the Suics. Nines are great. The Franken Suics are great. 10s, 12s. They're all great baits. But for me, if I could pick one and only one, it's going to be that 10-inch adjustable weight Suic. Definitely going to want to pick up some of those in that wood model.
I think I'm going to go with the third on the adjustable weight Suic. I love the 10-inch weighted wood. That one's going to definitely have a place in my box because there's times where you really want that bait to hang just a little bit longer, and that'll do it. And then, Jeff, you've seen it already, but you know we got one prototype that we're working on that hopefully will be a midsummer release. I'm excited to get that one out and play with that too. And
well, I didn't know if I could talk about that one.
So we can briefly talk about that one.
It's so going to be good. It's going
to
be good.
It is. It should be pretty good. And we're not necessarily saying, you know, we're going to revolutionize the musky world with it, but it's definitely got a time and place.
It's going to fill a gap in my arsenal that I've been wanting. That sounds wrong. That I've been wanting filled for a while. I heard it in my head before it came out loud, but exactly. I said it anyway. But honestly, it's going to be a good bait. I did throw the prototype. We saw the first ones. I got me and a couple other people, we threw it, and it's money. It's going to be good. Keep your eyes peeled for that one.
All right, let's talk about watercolor. You know, there's going to be clear water and dirty water, or dark stained, or however you want to talk about it. Obviously, those are, you know, two different, you know, options that people are mainly looking at. What do you prefer, dark stained water or clear water, and why would you choose one over the other?
Well, that's a great question. It really just depends on where you're at. You know, all lakes aren't created equal. In northern Wisconsin, we're very lucky to have the very large diversity and close proximity of these lakes. You can literally be on a flowage and jump across the road to a relatively clear lake that blooms green and drive a mile down the road and be on a lake that has lake trout and is gin clear. So we have those options on a daily basis. And I do think that if you learn how to do that in northern Wisconsin or an area similar to that, it will make you a better musky fisherman than most, especially if you can figure out the seasonal timing and the way that those lakes line up. Figuring out which lakes are going at a certain time under certain conditions, it's a loaded question because it changes seasonally. But if I had to say I could pick only one and only one, I think it would be something that blooms green. It's probably something that I would go with my favorite all time. Clear in the winter, clear in the spring, clear in the fall post-turnover, but blooms green, whether it be heavy green or light green. I find those lakes to be very productive. That could even translate all the way up to something as large as Green Bay. It gets that green algae bloom as well. They're typically very fertile eutrophic systems and one of my favorite waters to fish.
Well, like Jeff said, it's very situational because I guess I've bumped into a couple of situations where dirty water was preferable over clear water. And then I would hop over to a different lake and hear the exact opposite thing. And the two examples of that were Lake St. Clair, which if you're out there on like super clear water and everything looks beautiful, that's not what you want. You want this, like, it's kind of a cool looking greenish milky color to it. And so I was out there fishing with Mark Kornoski, and we found the water, we found fish, and you know, so that was cool to see. And then smash cut to coming back to southern Wisconsin and fishing with Colin Schlicht on Pewaukee, and he was talking about watercolor, and just I said, oh, do we want to find something a little bit darker so that, you know, the fish might strike better, you know, they can't see the boat. And he goes, oh no, we want the clearest water we can find. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, now I'm confused. But, you know, again, as Jeff said, it's situational. So you have to, and one reason to hire a guide on a lake that you're not familiar with, you know, these guys can tell you, what are we looking for in this, on this lake, in this region? Because I would have been completely fishing Pewaukee the wrong way if I would have been basing it on what I saw on Lake St. Clair. So That's where your guides come in real handy. And just time on the water, of course. Time on the water is better than any magazine or anything you could ever have.
Let me jump in quick. So about that, you know, Brian, you talked about hiring a guide. That is one way, and it's, we don't talk about enough on the podcast, is how quickly you can shorten your learning curve and in many situations. I mean, if you are taking a week-long trip, consider hiring a guide on the first day, you know, to shorten the learning curve. Ask them a bunch of questions. I really doubt that most of these guys on this panel are going to get mad if you ask a bunch of questions and try to learn, and that's most of what they do. So, you know, consider it this summer if you got trips booked or whatever and you got plans. Consider looking up one of the guides on this panel here today and get them out on the water. All right, DJ, sorry to interrupt. And by the way, you earned your bonus. The follow did come back on that St. Croix rod. So as much as I berated you on the podcast just before, you got your bonus on that one. Good job.
Yeah, so I'm a little torn. I really do love fishing stained, really dark water. It's just one of those things where it's like, it's almost like you don't know. It's that like bringing the lure in for the first turn of the figure eight, and you can just barely see the lure, and that fish you didn't see comes in. And it's up here, there's a lot of different lakes and that, and you get a lot of different pressures. And that stained water, I feel like something comes from it where those fish don't see boats as much, they might feel those from the vibrations that from the boats and that, but they don't get a lot of eye contact on it. But on the other hand, some of the clearest water I fish has the biggest fish in the area. So it's a 50-50, but I would say, you know, most of your stain water and that seems to be a little less pressure, just because a lot of people like to be able to see their baits and see their lures and see the fish in the water. But so you can definitely work through it a little more, and you can definitely fish water that most people might not pick apart the same way as somebody else. But clear water, and you know, you get into a lot of the Cisco-ish stained water, or Cisco's water, which is not stained. Some have most of the biggest fish in the area. I mean, just because of the food source.
I'd have to say I prefer dirty stained water over everything, because you can fish it under any conditions and feel good about what you're doing. If you get caught up on a clear body of water, sunshine and flat calm, you're kind of in a bad position. So, you know, don't get me wrong. I like going to the clear Cisco bodies of water, but only under the right conditions. I need a lot of wind. I need cloud cover. But more importantly, the wind. Need a lot of wind out there to get those fish to go. But yeah, I've seen big fish on both systems, you know, dark versus clear. But I'd have to say something a little bit different than you said, but I see more bigger fish in dirtier water up by me. I don't know why. It could be the amount of life that's in there, rich in zooplankton, which feeds the perch, which feeds the crappies, which feeds the muskies, blah, blah, blah. So that's, I prefer dirtier stained water over anything.
Wherever the fish are biting, is it that easy? No, I think it all comes down to time of year and weather, honestly. I mean, I fish a little bit of both. I find myself fishing more dirtier water in spring, early in the year. Just, you know, obviously that's going to be the water that's warming up the fastest. You're going to find the most active fish. And then again, late in the year too, I fish a lot of the dark water flowages late in the year, because those fish really, really pile up super shallow. I enjoy fishing them both, I guess. You can't beat a clear water bite when you can see the fish absolutely annihilate your baits. I mean, that's cool as hell. So I would say a little bit of both. It all kind of comes down to weather and time of year for me.
All right, the next question I'm pulling out of my head is, this may seem a little bit different, but so far at a lot of these muskie shows, I have customers that'll come into the booth and they'll show me their muskie. And like a lot of them want like one of the ones that they're proud of. And they always want to say, it's just 42. And it kind of like saddens me to hear them say it's just 42, because I think they're all hard to catch and I think they're all great. So it's like, it's disappointing that like they're not happier about a 42 inch muskie, because I'm super pumped when I get a 42 inch muskie. Like, I'm just curious, like, what do you guys consider to be a big fish? Because I consider a 42 to be a pretty big fish. You know, they're all, like I said, they're all hard to catch. They all take time and effort. And it's just sort of weird, because you hear so much about 50s, 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 and now it's even 55s, 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 that it's disappointing when I hear people belittle their 42 inch muskie. One of them today was a 42 inch tiger, beautiful 40 inch, 2 inch tiger. He's like, yeah, it's just 42. And I'm like, I'd take a 28 inch tiger. I've never caught a tiger muskie. Yeah, I've never caught one. So I'm just curious what you guys think on what do you consider to be a big fish?
Well, there's a lot of days that I wish I just caught a 42, That's a nice fish in my book. But I mean, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? It's all personal preference. But for me, I'd say, especially in Wisconsin, you look at a fish 45 or better, you're looking at a really big fish. But I'm happy with 42, 40. I'm happy with them all, to be honest with you. But I would say that upper echelon, especially in Wisconsin, 45 to 48, 49. I know you caught quite a few 49s up there, but you know, that's kind of what they're topping out at. So it all kind of depends where you are too, I guess. So.
No, and I agree with that. You know, that 50 inch number, I hate that number. I mean, yeah, it's cool. We're all going for it without a doubt, but it all depends on your goals for the day. I will never, ever shun any muskie that bites on a guided trip. Even if we're going after big fish and we don't get a giant, whatever, it's a muskie in the boat. Now, if we're fishing action bodies of water where we can go out and maybe contact 10, 11, 12 fish, you know, that's a different story, okay? Now, when we're going after these big fish, I would say anything over 45 as well is a really big fish for northern Wisconsin. And it's a big fish anywhere. You know, this 50-inch number is really masked what a quality fish is, and it's really sad to see that. Honestly, I don't boat a whole lot of 50 inches up where I'm at. A lot of them top out at 49, 49 and a half. I wouldn't trade that for anything because these things are coming out with 23, 24 inch girths. That's a giant animal anywhere you go. So, you know, it's all relative in the location that you're at, without a doubt. And, you know, northern Wisconsin has been kind of, you know, torn down for not having big fish. And, you know, people like, you know, Jeff, you know, Matt, all you guys, you know, proving them wrong, without a doubt. They're big fish. Yeah, we may not see 55 inches up there like we have in the past, but we've also seen Louis Spray's fish get, you know, knocked out of the books, if you will. I mean, it wasn't real. So, I mean, we're chasing either a fairy tale or, you know, things that just don't live there anymore. But we still have very quality big fish up there, and that's something to take account for.
Yeah, like you said, social media has been the ruiner of all fishing in my eyes. To me, I tell clients all the time, a trophy is something you work for. Can you achieve? If we're going out there to that day to achieve catching a muskie, does it really even matter what length it is? Because if you catch the muskie, that's your goal. You've achieved it. I've had clients, you know, that caught small fish, and clients have caught giant fish. It's, to me, if you put in the effort in that, you should never feel shamed for not catching a big one. I don't know a guide or a muskie fisherman that can choose what fish bites the end of their lure. So you do everything right. It could be a 28-inch muskie. It could be a 55-inch muskie. If you're doing it right and the fish eats, that's success. So watching a lot of the Facebook stuff and that, and, you know, all these giant fish and everybody blowing it all up, it's, I always joke, I'm like, nobody ever puts a small fish on. So, you know, a guy might show his giant fish, but he might have fished for 4 months to catch that fish and caught all kinds of small ones that he's just as proud of, but got shamed into not putting any of those on there. So I'm like these guys, northern Wisconsin, if you can get anything in the 40 class inch with some weight to it, man, that's a great fish. That's an old fish in northern Wisconsin. That's not some 10-year-old fish. That's 15-year plus. You're getting into those 40s to low, upper 40s to low 50s. So my biggest thing is I always tell people, I'm like, if it's your pursuit to get a fish, don't feel like if you catch something that isn't, you know, Facebook front page worthy, that shouldn't shame you into not being proud of what you've caught.
So having a little bit different take on this, not being a guide and just filming, it comes out the same in the end, I guess, because you guys are looking for fish to make the people that are paying you to take them out happy, whether it's a 28 inch or a 28 pounder, however you want to look at it. I'm coming at it from the sort of the same way, where I just need content. I need a fish to bite a lure. When I go musky fishing and I catch a musky, that is a win. And maybe for me, it's not a gigantic fish, but it makes a really cool jump and I can have some really cool slow motion. You know, it's a little bit different for me, but it all comes down to the same thing where I hate it too, where people are just belittling other people for, you know, oh, why would you post that fish? I went out December 30th with Colin and we boated three muskies that were all under 30 inches. They were the prettiest fish I'd caught all year. The markings were amazing. I threw those pictures up on Facebook, you know, almost expecting people to be like, what are you doing? And thank goodness nobody did, but because I would have had it with them. Yeah, they just keep complaining about the fat kid heavy breathing that I have. But yeah, no, it's the same. It's the same issue coming at it from a different direction. But I think we're all coming at it the same way of, man, you know, we're going out there and trying to catch these things. We're putting our time in. And if we can catch one of these beautiful fish, I love it. Whether it's 30 inches, 50 inches, doesn't matter to me. It's a muskie. They all smell the same.
Yeah, all good points. I think the social media, I mean, prior to that, may have been, you know, magazines or articles or TV shows that set maybe unrealistic expectations. You know, when you're going and filming on great locations and you got the guy, you know, that's filming and catching fish that maybe don't ever see baits versus the guy that's trying to fish Pewaukee. Those aren't really necessarily a realistic goal. I mean, really, the quote, comparison is the thief of joy, kind of comes to mind on that, because if you're going to compare yourself as a guy who has limited time to fish, or even a significant amount of time to fish, but limited travel abilities, or just you don't have the time to go spend 4 weeks on, say, Eagle Lake or something like that, it's not really a fair comparison. In northern Wisconsin, I was looking at my numbers this last year, and I figured out that for a legitimate 50.0-inch fish, which includes in this number a 52-inch tiger that we caught in 2014, which I sort of count, sort of doesn't. It's just such an outlier, but you have to count the outliers if you're going to count the short ones too. It's about one muskie per 233 that come in my boat that surpasses the 50-inch mark. The fit with legitimate mouth-closed, tail-pinch, 50.0-inch. Not 49.9, not 49 3/4, not, I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens more of those 48 to 49 plus up to the hair under 50-inch fish. Lots of them. If you're just rounding up, my numbers would be astronomically higher on those fish by comparison, but one muskie out of 233. You go to another place like something like Green Bay, it's about one out of 15. And places like St. Clair, it may be a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, but the frequency of 50s is really different. I've been fortunate to spend a lot of time in the Rick Lax booth at these shows for the last 12 plus years. And it's amazing how it varies from place to place where we go, where people are happy at. In Wausau, for example, here, somebody comes in with a 48. There's the vast majority of Wisconsin fishermen inland do not surpass the 50-inch mark with a legitimate 50. I will say that right now as a fact. You can see it in tournaments. You can see it in every piece of DNR data that's out there. I mean, look at the World Championship Muskie Hunt. 1,300 anglers competing for 2.5 days for the last 50 years, 40 years. And there's been like, I can't even think of a 50. That was... in the last 15 years, or maybe there was one 50.0. Like, you add up those angling hours, that is lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of angling without ever surpassing. And every year it's a nice, beautiful 49 and change. That fish is still probably 24, 25, 26 plus years old. Yes, there's bigger fish out there, but it's all about where you're at. If we had some way of knowing how old each individual fish was, you know, if you looked at it that way, a 39.8 inch male that's 25 years old from a northern Wisconsin lake, is that necessarily cooler than a 10-year-old 50 out of Green Bay or Minnesota? I mean, not really. I mean, depends on how you want to look at it. So it's really where you're at, apples to apples. But really the best thing to focus on is your arc as a muskie angler. See how you've improved, compare your own numbers to previous seasons. And just even in situations where, like, a fish that you caught that you know 2 years ago, there's no chance you wouldn't have converted that fish. You would have made a mistake in the figure eight. You would have made a mistake in the net job, especially if you're solo angling. That's the best way to, in my opinion, to count what a fish is. There's always the memory of who you're with and the stuff that goes, yeah, you caught it with your son or something like that. Very cool. But your arc as a muskie angler or a guide overall, compare yourself to your previous years. That's the best way to look at it, in my opinion.
All right, quick question, because we're running out of time. It's 7:57, but realistically, actually, there's still a crowd here. Like all the other shows we've been at, my booth has been dead, or the Muskie Man booth has been dead during the time of this podcast. So I'm still amazed there's a bunch of people shopping, so we'll likely be pushing past the 8 o'clock mark. But anyways, quickly, we all fished Wisconsin primarily. A lot of us are in northern Wisconsin. If you're not fishing northern Wisconsin, you could call home to a different state or, you know, lake area. Where's it going to be?
Calling home to another place, I mean, it'd be a hard one for me. It'd be really cool. I always thought to spend time up on some of the Canadian waters, maybe some of the lesser known, maybe some of the better known, to do that as like a full-time gig, just to see what you could accomplish on something like that, like a lake of the woods or a, you know, insert well-known body of water here. as far as somewhere to travel and go check out. There's a lot of states that are kind of off the grid there. I always wanted to go down and do the Iowa thing before. That's really popular now, or Pennsylvania, West Virginia. You know, the Dakotas are another good one. There's some really cool water out there. I've actually had the good fortune of fishing in North Dakota, and we had a banger of a trip. I think we hooked 18 and landed 9. I did a show out there with my good buddy, with Larry Smith, a couple years ago. And that was really a cool deal to just go somewhere completely different. And they had all different strains of fish. They had tigers, they had Minnesota fish, Indiana fish, Wisconsin fish, whatever they could get their hands on. So something really unique there. South Dakota's got some similar fisheries. I think I would like to go back out that way again. That would be probably high on my list. Head out west that way. Check out something like that, or possibly tigers in something like Utah or New Mexico.
So last year, I think I bought licenses for 7 different states and 1 province. And I, without question, I think if I had one spot to pick, it would be Eagle Lake in Ontario. I typically go there for the opener in June, and then I go there mid to late August, sometimes into September. And there's just nothing like it. I mean, the scenery combined with the quality of the fish, combined with the, you know, it's just such a challenge to get those fish to hit sometimes. I mean, we were up there for 8 days, and 4 days in the middle of my trip, we caught 0 muskies. But I woke up every morning just wanting to get back on the water and go do it all over again and punish myself. But yeah, and it's a 68,000 acre lake, and I'm maybe looking at 10,000 acres of it, maybe. And I find new stuff every year I go up there. So hands down, I would be on Eagle Lake.
I want to see Eagle Lake. I have not gotten there. So it might be a rotating to that P1, but I've kind of fallen in love the last few years with going to Lake of the Woods. It's just a giant expanse of water. It has all different ways to fish it and different sections and that. And it's like, I look at it this way, you could spend a lifetime up there and still never touch all of it. I mean, you can go from one end to the other, dirty, clear. I mean, there's lake trout in sections of it to where there's musky. So it's definitely a place that I would love to, you know, be out there if I wasn't here in northern Wisconsin.
You know, I could have moved anywhere when I decided to leave Madison. And I chose northern Wisconsin for, I don't know why, but again, to prove that there's still some big fish up there, without a doubt. But if I'd have to go anywhere right now, I'd agree with Jeff. I'd go out to North Dakota. You look at the fish that they've been growing out there besides muskies, giant perch, giant walleyes, giant pike, huge pike. And that all comes down to the food source that they have there, the freshwater shrimp and everything else. So you know that those muskies are getting big out there already, and they are going to be gigantic out there too. So that would be, if I had to choose one place to move and conquer a new area, it'd be the Dakotas without a doubt.
If I had to choose one place, I guess I'd probably say Canada as well, Lake of the Woods. Just kind of like you guys said, it just offers so much. There's so much water there. You can fish dark water, you can fish clear water, you can fish action areas, you can do the laker waters with lower densities but bigger fish. I've done a little bit of both, and it's just a phenomenal fishery, and you can't beat the view, and it's just awesome up there. But I would also like to get out east and play around a little bit. I've never been out to like Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, some of those waters. I think that stuff out there is a pretty cool bite too. So in time.
Well, that's a wrap on our live episode here from the Wisconsin Muskie Expo. I'd like to thank all of our guide panels for coming out, talking, for not only this one, but the 4 or 3 previous shows that we did. It's always great to have a different group of guys every single show that we do. And, you know, hopefully the people enjoy their own tables. I know I enjoy them. It makes my editing job a million times easier when we get back home on Monday. I can just literally drop the SD card in and upload it to my computer and then throw it on there. And we're done in about 15 minutes as opposed to my typical 2 hours or 3 hours that I spend doing it. And, you know, we want to thank all of our customers for coming out and supporting us all show season long. I would love to say that we're going to get this lucky again next year and have an unbelievable weather event for show season, but I don't think we will. So anyways, I just want to thank everybody again. Thanks everybody for listening to another episode of Backlash Podcast, and we will be back with a new one in studio next week, Wednesday.